Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is my co-pilot, Kyle Kraus.
Hello! How are you doing?
I'm doing alright. I'm a little disappointed because with the theme for today's episode, I wanted to refer to you something in French, but I don't speak a word of French. It's about as far as I get is eating French bread. It is a language that has eluded me.
French bread. Is that even really French? I'm not even sure at this point.
Well, I mean, you cut into it and it goes, ha ha, and then, you know, that's it.
I don't think that's true, but okay.
Roll with that. That means you haven't gotten a truly fresh French baguette.
Okay.
That and it slaps you if you try to put anything beyond butter on it.
Yes.
How are you doing, sir?
I am tired.
What are you doing?
But I'm doing pretty good, I suppose. All things considered, I guess I'm okay.
Not starting off on that positive note, there's one thing that we like to do in our free time, you and me, and that's watch some cartoons.
This is true.
Now, cartoons have changed a lot over the years. They've kind of shied away from the glorified 30-minute toy ad that we grew up with.
Yeah, a little bit. There's still some of that here and there, but a little better now. A little bit here and there.
It's not as overt.
Right, yeah.
Now, this is coming from a very novice perspective, but to me it seems like the hub of quality animation is shifting westward. There were always your American and Canadian animation houses like Deke and such, but, you know, when you think about really great 80s stuff, you think like the Thundercats intro, and that was very Japanese.
Yeah.
And it started moving into Korea, you know, Avatar the Last Airbender was absolutely exquisite to behold when they really poured the budget into certain scenes. Some of them were, you know, missing a few frames, but that's okay, that was only first season. Now, it seems like there's a lot coming out of France, which is, I don't know, not something I would expect. I don't immediately associate France with cartoons. But that said, if you've never had a chance, you really need to check out a lot of European comic books and how they do visual storytelling, because it's very different from the way that America does it. It's very fanciful. It's very fluid. It's really out there sometimes with far less inhibitions. And there's two cartoons that, if we have time, I want to touch on that I think really kind of encapsulate the fun and the whimsy and the quality that I'm talking about that I'm really getting into, even though I don't speak a word of French. Now, the first one, and I know that you've heard of this one, Kyle.
I've heard of both of these, actually. So go ahead.
But this one I know you've heard a lot of because Aaliyah is a huge fan of it, and, you know, she talks about it a lot. Is a new cartoon. It's had a huge international push. It's currently in the English version being pushed by Nickelodeon, and that is Miraculous, The Adventures of Ladybug and Chat Noir, or as everyone else calls it, Miraculous Ladybug, because they don't remember what the actual title is. And if you've not seen it yet, I really recommend it with some caveats. First thing to just to give you the general feel for the show, I guess, it's set in Paris. That's how you know it's French.
Of course.
And it's kind of like if you put Spider-Man through the Sailor Moon filter.
All right, I'm on board.
Because the, you know, eponymous character, Ladybug, does a lot of slinging around with a yo-yo instead of webbing. is bug themed, and her dynamic with Chat Noir, that's Black Cat for you English speakers out there, wink nudge, is very reminiscent of the Spider-Man Black Cat comic book dynamic. And, you know, the kind of age old straight man and fun foil. And it's, when I say Sailor Moon, it's very much formulaic. Every episode is pretty much by the numbers. You've got the initial theme, you've got somebody turned into a monster by the main villain, and then they are defeated through some happenstance in confronting the heroes, and they learn a lesson at the end. It's almost like clockwork.
Nice.
The thing is, it's a well-done formula show.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's that kind of scratch the itch where there's just enough of a tease that this might change or this might happen or something does happen. You know, some actual event that pushes things in a new direction, it catches you off guard because you're comfortably sitting there going through the motions like, okay, they're fighting their pun-named villain. This is delightful. That's a funny pun. She had a fun reaction to it. Oh, wait. Plot? When did that happen? Or, okay, I see exactly how this is going to go in terms of how, you know, he can wrap it up in the 22-minute runtime. Oh, wait, no. They're doing it differently. Aha, you caught me off guard. Well played. It's a CG show, and for a 26-episode first season, overall, I think the quality is exceptional for CG cartoons. Now, granted, they've come a long way since Reboot. Which is not to knock Reboot. Reboot was great.
Reboot was great for its time, yes.
It still endures if you tightly tie on your nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, there's, if nothing else, find the pilot episode called Stormy Weather, which has the higher animation budget than a lot of the other ones. But that really catches the fun and the bounce and the whimsy of the characters. And what really is the hook, the one thing that just kind of gets in you and holds you there, because they know what they're doing, is the love square between the two protagonists. Allow me to explain.
Yeah.
The two main characters are Marinette and Adrian, high school kids. Marinette is an aspiring fashion designer. Adrian is this largely sheltered male model. But he's a nice guy. He's, like, disarmingly nice. It's weird, but not in that annoying way. It's weird. So anyway, Marinette is head over heels for Adrian because he's just a gorgeous boy toy. And he's nice towards her. They're friends, but he's not really interested. Then you have their superhero alter egos, Ladybug and Chat Noir. Ladybug is far more agile and confident and a little less prone to running into things than Marinette, who is a complete klutz. And Chat Noir, because he is a superhero, can finally let loose. He's free of all the social and personal restrictions he's grown up under. So he just has a ball being this cat-themed superhero. And he's head over heels for Ladybug. But he comes on a little too strong for her, and besides, she's only interested in Adrian. They don't realize that they are who they are.
They're the same person.
And you would think that would get tiresome after 26 episodes, but it doesn't. They do this beautiful balancing act where it's innocent and it's fun and it feels legitimate. And yes, every single friend they have in their class has been turned into a monster, and they didn't realize that the only two of them that didn't turn into monsters are the superheroes. But that's besides the point.
We'll just ignore that.
Even the creators, you know, people are saying all they're wearing on their faces are domino masks. Their voices don't change. Their hair doesn't change for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
How do they not recognize each other? And the show creator said, it's magic. Just run with it. So
it's superheroes. That's how they roll.
Exactly. It's a show that knows what it is and has fun with it. It doesn't try to reinvent the wheel. It doesn't try to go in directions that are too challenging. It just tells a fun superhero show in France. If nothing else, Kyle, they fight an evil mime. And he pantomimes all of his weapons. There's one part in the episode.
Do they actually work, the weapons?
Yes! There's a part in the episode where he hefts something onto his shoulder and he drops something into a chamber and you're going, that looks like he's arming a bazooka. And then he blows up a car.
Nice.
He starts swinging with the full body motion. And this is where the animation really sings, because when your villain is a mime and his attacks are entirely in pantomime, if the physical action didn't read what he was supposed to be doing,
yeah,
the gag would fall through. It would just be an incoherent mess to watch. But it isn't. When he has to chase somebody down, he mounts an invisible motorcycle, puts on an invisible helmet, straps it to his chin, and then rides off. It's just, it's a really, really fun show. It's not brilliant by any stretch of the imagination, but it's one of those shows that you can just kind of get into and have fun with. You know, the kind where you go back to when you were a kid watching Saturday morning cartoons and going, okay, this is fun.
Yeah.
And, nicely enough, the English voice cast seems to be pretty top-notch, and the translation seems to be very, very close to the French.
That's good on both counts.
Now, for the listeners who are kind of scratching their heads going, Ian, you just said you don't speak a word of French. How do you know that? My wife speaks French.
Aha!
Huge fan of the show, so watching the episodes kind of side by side, or, you know, one after the other, she can point out saying, oh, they changed this line here, or they couldn't really make this joke work here, so they substituted it with that. And overall, it seems to be pretty close one-to-one. It just feels like it runs a little fast, because I'm fairly certain that European broadcasting standards play a little is it slower than U.S. standards? I forget how many.
Yeah, that's not really an issue anymore, from what I understand. But it used to be, yeah, back in the 90s and earlier. Like before HDTVs, essentially, you had two different standards where you had PAL and NTSC, but they usually compensated for that after, like, the 90s. Once you got into the 90s, they usually compensated for that a lot more, so you didn't have things necessarily running slower when they were brought over. But I don't know exactly if that's still something that would affect anything new, like this show.
I don't know. There's also the fact that it might be that French is designed to flow so quickly into each other, and English is much more Germanic in its very tight individual words coming together. So it might be that the English voice actors having to match the amount of information that's coming out per line, they might speed it up a little bit.
English is a very slow language.
Then again, I also heard that the animation was actually lip-synced to English for the French release.
Hmm.
Go figure.
Weird.
But it's already a hit. It's locked for two more seasons and a movie. And apparently it is huge in Korea.
Because why not?
I only say that because the Koreans made their own unique logo in Korean. Everyone else just uses the default, you know,
Miraculous logo, yeah.
And then did a custom version of the theme song with some pop idol group. Now, granted, saying pop idol group in South Korea is like saying grass in a field, but they take their pop idols a lot more seriously than we do. It's kind of a weird phenomenon. So I guess it's kind of big in Korea. Go figure.
Nice. I haven't watched it yet. I have seen some clips and some of the animation and stuff, and it's definitely a beautiful looking show. I'm just really glad that 3D animation has come as far as it has. And that it is as expressive and emotional. The emotional potential of it is there. That a lot of people kind of decried originally when it started to kind of take hold over 2D animation.
Right, because you couldn't really go beyond the uncanny valley with those early facial models.
Right.
But speaking of expressions, that's one of the things that I really enjoy about Marinette as a character, is you have this female lead protagonist, and they aren't afraid to make her human. She isn't, you know, perfectly pretty. She isn't afraid of being girly. She just is a teenage girl.
Yeah.
And they don't restrict her facial expressions or her body language to something that is pretty or traditionally feminine. She will make some really goofy faces as something comes flying at her face, or Chanoir drops a really awful pun. There's one shot in particular where he gets injured And the look of anger on her face is just straight out vicious. She is a fully realized person, and I really, really appreciate that in the construction of her character. Likewise, Chat Noir, who is the, I don't know, the gambit to her, I suppose, the one who's always kind of, you know, see, if I say hitting on her, it almost sounds dirtier than it is. It's flirtatious, mm-hmm. but it isn't creepy. It isn't in this dirty or off-putting way. It's always, you know, he's cracking a joke, he's coming in close, and then she says, focus on the mission. He's like, okay, and they move on. Perhaps with another pun. But still, the point is, their dynamic is fun, and it's youthful, and innocent, and, well, maybe not entirely innocent, because, you know, this is Europe. They get away with a lot more. But, you know, it's delightful, is what I'm getting at.
It definitely looks like it. I should watch it. I wanted to watch it this week, you know, when we were talking about this earlier, but I didn't have the chance to. But it looks good.
The other show that I know that you haven't had a chance to watch, ha ha ha.
Right. Well, you know what? Actually, going back, I think I watched like the first two episodes of it, and it wasn't for a fact that I couldn't get into it or anything. It's just, time restraints. But also, this was years ago, so I hardly remember anything of it. But anyway, carry on.
We are talking about Wakfu.
Or Wakefu, or whatever you want to call it.
I think the common pronunciation is Wakfu.
Okay.
I could be wrong. Please comment and say I'm wrong. But the it is a multimedia blitz of a project. It's a cartoon, it's a number of comic books, and it's a massive multiplayer online RPG. Which is turn-based, and I'm not entirely sure how that works, but hey, whatever floats your boat. And it's technically a sequel to an earlier series called Dofu, and they both revolve around the same world, it's just after a time skip. How to sum this up? Very basically, in this world there are 12 gods, and roughly 12 races derived from them. It gets fuzzy around that, but we won't get into all that. Point is, 12 gods, 12 races, lots of magic and hullabaloo going on. And in between Dofu and Wakfu, the monster, ogre, individual, ogrest, began crying. And he is so powerful that his tears flooded the world, creating the islands that is the world of Wakfu. Now, all that set up, Wakfu itself is, again, boiling it down to the very, very basics. The story of a young boy named Yugo discovering his power and his identity and helping to save the world, which really does not do it justice because there is a lot of intricacies that I'm glossing over. But it's the story of Yugo and his friends, the Brotherhood of Tofu, as they kind of come together through happenstance and kind of meander in and out of adventure that just happens to save the world. And the art style alone is gorgeous.
And oh, yeah.
It really plays to that European style I was talking about that feels significantly less restricted than a lot of American style. It's kind of Disney-esque, I suppose, in its fluidity and the curves and the way that things just kind of bounce and move into each other. But at the same time, it's very distinctly European. It's also remarkable because it is a Flash animated show that doesn't look like a Flash animated show.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you've seen Flash animated shows, you know what I'm talking about, where everything is tweened and it almost looks like paper marionettes dancing across the screen. And there are moments of traditional animation that are absolutely gorgeous, Kyle. But the Flash that is in there is phenomenally executed to the point where you don't even care that it's Flash. If nothing else, I highly recommend getting through the first season, because the villain, Nox, is one of the best villains in any media that I have consumed.
Oh, yeah?
His mission is heartbreaking. His rationalization, while cold, isn't completely heartless. And the turnaround at the very end really is even more heartbreaking than why he's getting out there to do it. That, and he's kind of this clockwork mummy, so he's got style. Nice. For miles. The first season takes a little bit of time to get into. It's a lot of done-in-one monster of the week type of things, played more for laughs than actually progressing a plot.
Mm-hmm.
But once it hits its stride about, I don't know, maybe halfway through the season, as things start to build and each of the characters starts to get their own personal quest and direction, and Nox's plan really starts moving forward, oh, buddy. That's the good stuff.
Nice.
That's what you come for. Season 2 is better than Season 1, hands down. It suffers a little bit from pacing, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first arc, I would say, of the season revolves around a character finding one that was lost in Season 1. And it's a really interesting and really fun story. It's just once they reach the end of it, it kind of feels like they lose their footing for a few episodes. And then when the new villain is introduced and the new direction is set up, it really starts picking up until it gets to the finale. And that three-parter, holy crap, Kyle. You would think that the demon invasion of the world would be the big point, but it's kind of second fiddle.
Oh, boy.
It's, oh. I would love to spoil it, but you haven't seen it yet. And it's one of those things that I really think you need to experience for yourself. It's just fantastic. Then after Season 2, they did a 3 extra long episode OAV that's kind of the unofficial Season 3. It really moves the story forward a whole bunch. And it gathers up a lot of material from the comic books they had on the side, from material they were developing with Dofu, and it all comes together in this huge turning point that you could almost argue would be the end of Wakfu and the beginning of a third kind of saga. I don't know how they're going to play it, because Season 3 hasn't come out yet, but they're working on it, and I want it. Kyle, I want the Season 3.
Season 3 is not out. Didn't that show come out, like, 5 years ago?
It's been a while. It's the
Maybe
studio
4 years ago, now that I think about it.
The studio and Kama is not your traditional media company, I guess.
True.
They're very much kind of go with the flow, do what's cool for artistic sake. At least that's how they come across. Which is cool in terms of mentality. Doesn't make for the tightest storylines, but it's fun, so you kind of forgive it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a few other miniseries and movies off to the side that kind of fill in some of the gaps. There's an episode about Gultard, who has a really convoluted backstory, but that doesn't matter because he's really cool. There's one that tells the origin of Nox, but the art style doesn't match with anything else in the series, and the story is not particularly well told, so you can skip that one. And then there's a movie that tells the origin of Ogrest. It doesn't tell how Ogrest goes from his origin to the literal planet-changing monster form, but it's a cute story on its own right. And all of this is available on Netflix with an unfortunately mediocre English dub.
Oh, no.
It was funded by Kickstarter. People wanted it so bad, just from its exposure on the internet, to get it dubbed. And they dropped the ball. I've heard it's not unwatchable, but just some of the characters and some of the translations and some of the translation choices are suspect, and it's sad. So if you can find a subbed version, I hate to be the kind of French otaku here, I guess. It was not in the original language. But I really think that you need to experience it with a competent voice cast, and boy howdy is the French cast amazing. I can't understand a word they're saying, but they really sound good.
That's all that matters, as long as they sound good.
If you haven't been sold on the show yet, let me give you this. In Season 1 and in Season 2, there are 2 3-part arcs, which is basically Dragon Ball Z meets rugby.
What?
Imagine playing rugby, but with Dragon Ball Z rules.
Okay.
Lasers and flying around and blowing stuff up and pretty much anything goes.
That's pretty good.
Oofball, Kyle. It's the sport of the future.
I'd watch it.
That Chris LaCrasse is just a classy guy if he is a dirtbag. He's the classiest dirtbag you'll ever meet. It's, oh, Kyle, you gotta watch the show. You gotta watch the show. You gotta do it. You gotta do it. Kyle, watch the show. Kyle.
have a feeling if you were here and like we were like actually in the flesh with each other, you'd be like shaking my shoulders. Watch the show. Watch the show.
No, sir. If we were in the same place,
you'd just force me to watch the show.
Chair, and I'd be pulling up the computer, going, "Okay, okay. So we're just gonna watch like the first 5 hours, and then we'll see how it goes." Okay, okay. Here we go.
Right, right, right. I mean, that's what we did with Dragon Ball Z Abridged. So why not?
Yeah, that's what we did. Now, in my defense, with that one, I didn't realize how many episodes in we were, so...
You know what? It was worth watching because it's hilarious and awesome.
It is a fantastic show. And I don't know if you've caught up with season 3 so far?
Yeah, I'm keeping up with it.
Okay. I'm really impressed with how they are still balancing the humor, but they're taking what I feel is like the strongest story arc in that whole series and really hitting all the drama points really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a really good job with it. It's not just all wall-to-wall silly jokes.
Exactly. And then when they really want to be ridiculous, they just try out the movies, like with Android number 13 and Where Is My Trucker Hat?
Yeah.
You gone done did it now, son.
Oh, boy.
But we could talk about DBZ Abridged and the Team Four Star crew all day.
Oh, yeah.
Except we spent all day talking about cartoons. So let's talk about something else. Kyle?
I got some quick updates about the show, the one you're listening to, The Bumblecast.
Updates about the show.
That's our new theme song right there. You just heard
updates
it.
About the show. We'll get to them, but first you have to listen to this jingle. Updates about the show. And we're about to go. Kyle, please tell us the updates about the show.
Thank you very much. All right. First of all, you may have noticed, starting with the last episode, that we're no longer officially taking Q&A questions from YouTube comments. Unfortunately, it's getting to be kind of a burden to keep up with going through every YouTube video on a regular basis looking for your questions. That's not to say that I won't look at comments every once in a while and maybe pull some questions out, but as far as like grabbing every question, or at least most of the questions that we can answer, it'll just be sort of on a case-by-case basis whenever I happen to look at them. However, in lieu of that, we are now accepting Q&A questions via email, and you can send them to us at bumblecast@yahoo.com.
Now, patrons can still ask questions on the Patreon, of course.
Right, of
course. Even if they don't have the priority, as long as you are, Patreon, you can ask questions. And we are still taking questions on Twitter, #Bumblecast.
Oh, yeah.
Please include the #Bumblecast, because otherwise you're just asking questions. It's like, is that to me or is that to the show? I don't know.
You can also hit me up directly in private or whatever, and I can also throw them in there too. So that's not a big deal. So if you want to grab me, message me, whatever, and I'll make sure your question gets in the show eventually.
But our three primary ways are the email address, bumblecast@yahoo.com, Twitter, #Bumblecast, and on the Patreon.
Right. Those are the three easiest and best ways. Also, recently, Google Play Music launched the podcast section on there, and Bumblecast is up there. So if you are in the Google Hive mind like I am, you can subscribe to the Bumblecast on Google Play Music.
Welcome to 10 years ago, Google Play. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, you're finally here. Although 10 years ago, Google Play didn't even exist. So,
Details.
Yes, yes.
Worked harder.
Yes, yes. And one last update. SoundCloud, at the end of May, toward the end of May, unfortunately, we're going to have limited availability of older episodes on the SoundCloud. It may be the last two or three episodes at most up on the SoundCloud at any given time after May. So, if you are a SoundCloud listener, then listen to the episodes when they come out and don't wait too long, because as we upload episodes, more are going to be bumped off.
And that's nothing we can really control on our end. That's SoundCloud doing what's
Yeah, that's SoundCloud. That's a limitation on SoundCloud. They only allow us to have 180 minutes of audio public at a time. I believe. So, and that's with a free account. Now, I will say this. Supporting us via the Patreon is extremely helpful, and we very much appreciate it. And doing that can also help us get the SoundCloud archive in full back online. So if you're interested in that and you feel like helping us out, definitely contribute what you're able to the Patreon, and we'll look into getting all of them back on there. But in the meantime, we have plenty of other sources you can go to. Google Play Music, iTunes, they're all archived on YouTube. They're all up on KNGI.org and BumbleKing.com. So there you go.
We do everything we can for you.
Yeah, we're really making sure we can get this show out there on as many platforms as possible for you guys, so everyone who wants to listen to it is able to in the manner that they want. All right, are we ready for some Q&A?
Let's do some Q&A. Do we have any priority Q&A from our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/bumblecast?
First up, we have a makeup question. From the last episode, Samuel P. asked a question that unfortunately we couldn't give him really a good answer to. So, to make up for that, for one of our patrons, we'll go ahead and give him this question here. And he wants to know, what do you think of IDW's TMNT comic by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz?
Sam, you have a fantastic way of asking me questions I can't give you good answers for, because I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I haven't read it either.
It's on a list of things that I want to read, uh-huh. But I haven't really had the time to get into it. Is that the one that's a continuation of the original Turtles, or is that the one where they kind of picked up, took all the old canon and kind of shuffled it around and did a new take on it all?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely certain. I think it's either in a, like, kind of based on the original canon, at least. But I don't know how much of it. I don't know how much of it.
If it's the latter, what little bit I have been able to experience has been fantastic. It takes these old ideas and it reimagines them in a more focused way. Because the original Ninja Turtles was basically a lampoon. It was an indie comic thumbing its nose at the mainstream, and it exploded. They didn't know this was going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
They were watching bad Japanese monster movies and getting drunk and making up stuff, and that's how the Ninja Turtles were born. They were not expecting this massive media empire to grow out of it.
Yeah, they were also watching Daredevil, or reading Daredevil.
Yeah. So, being able to have at least one of the original creators go back and say, okay, here's all the madness that we were just having fun with, let's do it a little more concisely.
Mm-hmm.
I think really captures the original spirit while being a more solid story. So I wouldn't say I have an informed opinion on it, but what little I have seen of it, I greatly enjoy.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. It looks stunning. If you're a big fan of the original Ninja Turtle style, this is probably a book you're already reading. All right. Let's get into some normal Q&A from the regulars out there. We've got one. This first one here is from Fritzy Beat. They want to know, out of pure curiosity, if either of you were to start your own original comic series and you were given the choice to select your ultimate comic creator dream team, writers, artists, etc., who would you select to work on that comic with you and why?
There are projects I'm working on right now, very, very slowly, that already have some people attached to it, and these are people that I really want to work with. I don't want to go into too much detail, because I don't want to promise the moon and not deliver less Hedgehog Tales, because they really are going very, very slowly. But I can't say there's one original comic that I want to do, because I've got pages and pages and pages of just concepts alone that are multi-book things, and I have trouble focusing on just one epic at a time. And there are so many wonderfully talented artists I've had the pleasure of working with over the years that I can't pick just one, you know?
I couldn't either.
Chad Thomas or Ryan Jampel or Matt Herms or Jen Hernandez or Brian Thomas or Patrick Spaziante or I'm forgetting a dozen people already. Any one of them I would love to do a project with because I want to play to their strengths. And I probably have a project squirreled away specifically. I wanted to work with them on that. But, I can't pick one. What about you, Kyle?
Well, I couldn't pick one, just one either of each of these, of a writer or an artist. I couldn't do it. I mean, you are an obvious choice for me, but you're not the only choice. Because there's also Aaliyah Baker.
Well, see, but the problem with Aaliyah is that she is the double whammy. She can draw and she can write, which immediately makes me superfluous. So let's just focus on me and how much you love me. Please? Please?
Well, I do. I mean, come on. You're the only reason I'm still reading the Sonic comics.
That's not true. We have a very talented art team.
That's true. Your art team is amazing, but
which also includes Aaliyah. So there again.
Yes. Undercut. Yes. But I mean, like, the whole reason I got back into the comics after dropping out of them when I was a kid was because you started writing them. And but I don't have too many comic creators that I am extremely familiar with who I know by name and enjoy their work. I'm kind of still a comic casual, I suppose. Is that a thing?
Oh, sure.
I'm very casual with comics, but I've been increasing my comic intake recently, and some of the creators that I've really enjoyed stuff from have been G. Willow Wilson, who is currently the writer of the rebooted Miss Marvel, Curtis J. Weeb or Weeby, who is writing Rat Queens for Image Comics, which is an absolutely outstanding book that I love. And I've only read the first volume, but I have the other two waiting for me that I really need to dive into. Definitely not an all-ages read. And Paul Dini, who is, of course, the man behind the Batman animated series and a lot of the DC Comics animated universe, has done a lot of writing for DC Comics and started working on cartoons for Marvel recently. And it's just done a lot of other really cool stuff. And I think those would be sort of the names I kind of gravitate to.
You see, I would restrict myself to artists because mm-hmm. with writers, number one, if I really like how they write things like Paul Dini or Ed Brubaker or Michael J. Straczynski, I like what they do, so I wouldn't want to get in their way.
Right.
I like how they write, so let them write. I would rather do that. Artists, I can't art. I am not an art person.
I'm not either at all. Nope.
I would much rather collaborate with someone who can help me realize a vision than someone who I know is already better than me at what I do, so let me hide my inadequacies with people who are better than me than in ways that I am willing to admit.
Most of my art choices, my artist choices, would most of them come from Sonic Comics and Mega Man. If I were working on a more, I suppose, less serious, a story less serious in tone, more kind of cartoonish, I wouldn't outright say it's a 100% cartoon all the time, but you know what I mean. But I would definitely want to work with Ryan Jampel and Diana Skelly. Both of them would be fantastic.
Oh, they're phenomenal.
Yeah. Rafa Knight on covers, of course, because why not?
Why not?
Exactly. And if I were doing a a little bit more serious, maybe a little bit more realistic art style book, Steven Sajic, he of the strange first name, especially. Strangely spelled first name, but I believe it's just pronounced Steven. Or at least very similar to Steven. Also did art on the second volume of Rat Queens. Has a lot of stuff on DeviantArt is actually quite a clever writer as well as a fantastic artist. I really enjoy the way that he draws expressions and the variety of facial expressions and character that his art really shows. So those would be my choices. All right. Next question. We got one from Tabby. This one is, if Hershey were in a TV show, Hershey the Cat, who would play her? I assume this would be like kind of a voice thing, cartoon style. But maybe not.
I never really had a definite voice for her in my head when I was writing her. You know, just actually finding a character for her was difficult enough. But I can't really say I have anyone specific in mind voice acting her.
I can't really think of one either. It's been so long since I've seen Hershey, it's kind of hard to grasp her character.
Let's just say Tara Strong, because she voices everybody, so there you go.
Yeah, she could work for that. And we got one here from Fancy Fool, our good friend Fancy Fool. What is the source behind Big's overwhelming strength? Does he catch a lot of high-protein fish?
Well, this one is kind of the elephant in the room. It's something that is so obvious, it's subtle. It's really, you have to really look. He's big. He's the tallest character by canon. He walked into town and he picked up a car because he thought Froggy was underneath it. He's big. That's all there is to it. He's big.
I really did think you were going to go into a serious question there.
His arms are longer than Sonic is tall, and they're nothing but muscle. He's big. What more do you want? He's big. He's bigger than Omega Kyle.
But he's also a cat. I mean, cats aren't necessarily known for their strength.
Have you ever fought a cat? Have you ever tried to put a cat in a carrier when it doesn't want to be in there?
Well,
cats have powers, Kyle. They will fight you tooth and nail, as in they use their tooths and nails.
You have a lot more experience, I suppose, with cats than I do.
I do. And trust me, Kyle, they look like they're made out of furry liquid. Lying there purring and being subservient. But no, when they want to move, when they don't want you to do something, all bets are off. So that's simply the nature of Big. He doesn't want that car to be there. It's not there.
Nice.
He doesn't want that thing to be heavy. It's not heavy. He's big. That's all there is to it.
I am not a cat man, I guess.
Funny thing is, he is. What about
I see what you did there. All right, Uwahi wants to know, ever played any Mega Man or Sonic fan games before?
I know I've played some Sonic ones in the past, but I can't recall.
I've played a lot of ROM hacks of Sonic. Do those count?
I mean, part of it is I don't have any controllers that hook up to the computer, so playing anything on a standard keyboard is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Unless it's designed for it. Mm-hmm. I would love to play some of the ROM hacks folks have done of Generations, where they've imported older levels into the Generations engine or imported new characters, because those are just amazing. I would love to, you know, do that myself, but I don't even know where to begin. But I've not really played any of those, no. Maybe dabbled slightly on the side years ago, but haven't really played, no.
Yeah, I remember playing Sonic Robo Blast 2. Some of the Sonic ROM hacks that came out of Sonic Retro, and a few other things here and there. I've played a few Mega Man fan games. Rocko-chan is one of my favorites. It's basically female Rockman. And what else? Oh, Street Fighter Cross Mega Man. That one was actually really fun and really well done. And, of course, officially endorsed by Capcom of America. So there's that. And I think that's about it for the Mega Man ones that I've played. Oh, no, I played Rockman 7 FC, which was an NES-style remake of Mega Man 7. And it works really well, actually. If you didn't like Mega Man 7 on the Super Nintendo so much, definitely give Rockman 7 FC a try, because it maintains sort of the level design of Mega Man 7, but really captures the spirit of the classic games a lot better, I think, for people who are fans more of the NES style. And I think they're either working on or released Rockman 8 FC as well. I haven't played that one yet. Icy Line, Soline, I probably am pronouncing that wrong, but that's okay. They ask, since Shadow is half Black Arms, does he ever crave human flesh?
I don't think so, no. I would imagine that when Gerald was crafting him, he kind of tinkered and took that part out.
I'd hope so. And last question. This question comes from Unknown Shadow 675. Are there drugs in Sonic's world? Like drugs that enhance your senses or abilities? Like Red Eye from Cowboy Bebop, for example?
Oh boy. Flat answer, no. Because this is a magical, happy world where everyone is treated equally, and thus there is no need or desire to escape reality through various psychotropics. It would be interesting if somebody were to want to achieve Sonic's level of ability and cheated to get there through some form of enhancement, but that storyline very, very quickly starts treading the line of the 90s era war on drugs propaganda and becomes one of those very special episode type of stories. And I really don't want to do that. That, and I've gotten into this before, Sonic is not a platform that I'm comfortable tackling real world issues in, because one, it's not mine.
Right.
And two, it's an ad. It is a 20-page ad for a video game series. It's not the soapbox for social commentary. We can touch upon ideas in broad strokes, but I don't want to approach drug abuse or any of that nonsense, because it's a talking blue hedgehog. Come on. That's not where you do it.
Yeah, not really the venue for that sort of thing.
It's meant to be your moment of escape from a reality. You enjoy the story, and then you go back to a nasty world where there's politics and drug abuse and inequality and yeah. Let's not bring that into the happy world of talking colorful animal people who fight a fat man and robots shaped like bugs.
Okay. Let's not.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Serious business.
That's true.
And we're going to wrap up our show, as always, with a big shout-out to all the patrons who made this episode possible. Thank you guys from the bottom of our hearts. If you want to join these esteemed people, go to patreon.com/bumblecast and join on up. You can join for as little as a dollar or for as much as, I don't know, how much do we need to be financially secure, Kyle?
$1 million.
All right, so anywhere between that range, whatever you're comfortable with. So, shout-out goes out to Daniel H., Daniel L., Samuel P., Justin G., Connell T., Kelsey R., James K., Patty M., and Alex P. Thank you guys again for everything you've given us.
You rock.
If you want to keep up with what I'm doing and what's going on in my life, go to bumbleking.com or at Twitter at IanFlynnBKC. That's where all the news and stuff surrounding me and my work is, so please feel free to spy and snoop and follow.
And if you're looking for what I'm doing, head on over to kngi.org and grab the archived episodes of this show, as well as my other show, Game Fuel, if you're looking for video game music, especially focus on remixes and arrangements. Head on over there and grab that, and a whole bunch of other shows as well. And, of course, you can also follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. And also, the theme song this week is by Carbohydro M. Be sure to check out his music at carbohydrom.net.
That's going to wrap it up for Bumblecast episode 16. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you again in the month of May. Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Cota Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.